Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. A new documentary is challenging how we define intelligence. The film, titled Intelligent Lives, follows three young adults with intellectual disabilities. It's a call, the director says, for more inclusivity in schools and in the workplace for people with intellectual disabilities. It's also a call to reconsider how we measure intellect. The film will have its East Coast premiere at the Independent Film Festival in Boston on Friday. Dan Habib is the director of the film. He's also a filmmaker at the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire, and he joins me now. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So your film, Intelligent Lives, focuses on the story of young adults primarily with different intellectual disabilities, kind of navigating this transition from childhood to young adulthood. Why did you want to make this film about that transition?
Well, honestly, so much of my work stems out of my own experience as a parent. My son Samuel is a high school senior who's got a great circle of friends. He's planning on going to college next year. He's involved in lots of extracurricular activities. He's also a kid who uses a wheelchair, has a communication device, can't really speak. And because of his different way of navigating the world, he's often seen as being less intelligent. And that's been our experience for his whole 18 years of his life. When I did the film, including Samuel, about him about 10 years ago, and I started showing it around the country, people continually said, well, sure, Samuel, who has physical disabilities, can be included in regular school, but certainly not kids with intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. So that question came up so much that I started realizing that there's a major systemic segregation of people with intellectual disabilities. Only 17% of high school students with intellectual disability are included. Only 15% of adults are employed. So it was really a way to look at this issue of segregation among this one group of Americans that I would say are the most segregated Americans.
Mm-hmm. And the film basically focuses on three young adults, mm-hmm. Micah, Nair,
right,
and Naomi. And I think for the purposes of our conversation, we'll focus on Nair. He's an aspiring artist at the Henderson Inclusion School here in Boston. So tell us a little bit about Nair.
Sure. Well, you know, Nair is the same age as my son Samuel, and I've actually been filming him his whole high school career. Mm-hmm. I started filming him as a freshman and wrapped up as during his senior year. And Nair represents an age range for a lot of students where many of them become even more segregated. Most high schools around the country would not be including a student like Nair who has significant autism and verbal challenges. He would be in a separate classroom, maybe even a separate school. But the Henderson School here in Dorchester is, I would say, one of the most inclusive high schools in the country. They do not segregate kids with disabilities, and they have many kids with significant disabilities. I've known the Henderson for a while. I've done some other filming there for other projects. And their principal, Tricia Lamprin, introduced me to Nair and said, you've got to meet this kid. He's an incredible young man, and he's a really gifted artist. And he expresses himself more through his art than through his words. And so I got to know him, his art teacher, his social studies teacher. And the kind of twist on Nair's story is he's also a tall black man with unpredictable behaviors because of his autism. Yeah. And so his father, Jamal, his social studies teacher, Samuel Teixeira, who's also an African-American, have said to me they're concerned about how the world is going to perceive Nair when he's out in the community outside of this Henderson bubble. And as again, a tall black man with unpredictable behaviors in our society is vulnerable, you know,
right,
to things happening from the police and from others. So it's his story is pretty complicated.
Well, to that point, we have a clip from the film. One of Nair's teachers, his history teacher at Henderson, is Samuel Teixeira, and he describes the school and Nair's in it, sort of. Let's listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that intelligence looks different for everybody. It's clear that he has an intellectual impairment. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he can't be intelligent.
It means to take seriously.
I have a lot of students who don't communicate in traditional ways and are nonverbal or do communicate in ways that the outside world sees as very different. And, you know, we always joke that the Henderson is sort of like Disneyland, like it's a special place. We're all family. People sort of get things and are patient. But sometimes it is troubling to wonder what might the outside world perceive him as.
So I'm wondering, Dan, you know, is the Henderson School like Disneyland, and does more need to be done really to prepare these young adults for a world that may perceive them very differently?
Well, I think – I honestly think that the best experience to be ready for the quote-unquote world is to be with your peers in a regular education environment throughout your whole career. And that's what's happening throughout the Henderson schools and through many schools around the country. I mean, there's 30 years of research that show that kids who are included – kids with disabilities who are included in regular education end up with better employment outcomes, better post-secondary outcomes in terms of college. They have stronger communication skills, more behavioral management. They have better relationships in their life in terms of romantic relationships. So, you know, Henderson knows the research. And I think that that is also a real benefit to kids without disabilities because, you know, they need to see that this is the real world we live in. And when we talk about diversity, diversity is certainly ethnic and racial. It's around gender. It's around sexual orientation. But it's also around disability. So I really think Henderson embraces that as part of their diversity.
Right. But you know, it's always resources, I guess, in one way or another. And some folks might say, do we have the resources to make supportive environments for everyone, also fair to everyone, you know, disabled and non-disabled kids alike, because there are some kids who are in regular ed programs who may be distracted. And at one point in the film, you show Micah's sister, who works at a teacher as a teacher in an inclusive classroom. And sometimes she seems to be a bit overwhelmed and struggling, you know, to work with some of her students. If teachers are listening, what do you say to them that there would be ways to help them include everybody and make sure that everybody, you know, gets the attention they need in a classroom?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, education's complex. It's a very difficult job no matter what the environment is. Mm. One of the interesting things about Henderson is that it has some of the highest test scores also in the city. In fact, there's a waiting list of, I think, almost 1,000 kids without disabilities to get into Henderson, which is the most inclusive school in Boston. It's interesting, you know, people talk about resources a lot. I've had the chance to travel and do filming in schools all around the country. I was in the Mississippi Delta not long ago filming, one of the poorest communities I've ever been in, 100% free and reduced lunch, you know, community, also happens to be 100% African-American. They were doing inclusion incredibly well because they it wasn't just one teacher's responsibility. They had the occupational therapist in the room helping out, the physical therapist. They at one point had a custodian come up and watch a classroom while the teacher was working with a small group of kids. So I think schools that recognize this is an all-hands-on-deck approach to make sure that all kids can be successful, they're the ones that are doing it well. And I've been in some wealthy communities that say, oh, we can't do inclusion. And I say, you know what? If they can do it in the Mississippi Delta, they can do it in your community as well.
Mm-hmm. Now the film's narrator is actor Chris Cooper, who talks about his son, Jesse, with cerebral palsy. And Chris Cooper fought to have Jesse included in general education. And early on in the film, he talks about the Stanford-Binet IQ test. And let's listen to what he says.
The IQ test told us nothing about my child's potential, about who he was as a person. Can any attempt to measure intelligence predict a person's value or ability to contribute meaningfully to the world?
And Dan, the reason I bring that up now is because we're talking about sort of inclusion and general education. And I'm wondering, when so much is focused on not just Stanford-Binet, but standardized testing in general, you know, do you have a big battle ahead of you? And then we'll talk a little bit about the Stanford-Binet.
Yeah. Well, I think I love Chris's line there where he says, can any measure of intelligence predict a person's value to contribute meaningfully to the world? To me, that's the synthesis of the whole film in a way. And Chris and his wife, Marianne Leone, are also executive producers on the film and were so generous in giving their time. And I think they, you know, they share the experience of seeing intelligence much more broadly, and not just intelligence, but people's capacity to contribute in all kinds of ways to the world. And I do think it's a problem that we often try and measure, you know, in a quantifiable way, what is someone's capacity, you know, whether it's through intelligence testing or through SATs or through standardized testing. And, you know, the reality is that when you talk to big-time corporate executives at places like Google or Apple, they don't necessarily want to know how somebody did in algebra. They want to know, what are their leadership skills like? What are their communication skills like? How innovative are they? How creative are they? How collaborative can they be? Those are the kind of skills you learn in a very diverse environment like an inclusive school like Henderson. You don't learn that through taking a test. So I think it's actually really preparing kids for the real world of employment to have these kind of diverse environments. Hmm.
And you know, you talk about some of the history of the Stanford-Binet IQ test. Mm-hmm. And just briefly, when you learned that history of this test, what struck you?
Well, you know, I'm someone who's lived as a parent of a child with a disability for 18 years. I work at the Institute on Disability at UNH, and I was unaware of some of the unbelievable repercussions of IQ testing in the early part of the 20th century. The fact that almost 90% of Russian Jews and Italians were deemed feeble-minded because they couldn't pass the IQ test at Ellis Island. I didn't realize that hundreds of thousands of people were sent into institutions because of their scores on IQ testing, and that 60,000 people were forcibly sterilized because they wanted to eliminate this feeble-minded population from our society. You know, I was blown away, and I really think the history is important for people to understand because, you know, you look at something like Black Lives Matter or the Me Too movement. If you don't know that we're a country that has a history of racism and slavery, you don't understand Black Lives Matter. If you don't understand that we're a country that has systematically oppressed and segregated women, you know, for hundreds of years, you don't understand the Me Too movement. So I think people, in order to understand the inclusive education and inclusive employment movement, need to understand this history.
Why do you – you know, we don't do that anymore, obviously, and use the test to sort of determine who might be feeble-minded, quote-unquote.
We still do very similar things, though.
But why – but in education, right? So why has it been so slow to change in education, do you think?
Right. Well, it's a great question. I mean, schools are big monolithic institutions. And I think just on a federal level, we're trying to determine, well, where do kids belong and how do we decide where kids belong? And sometimes we look for the most blunt instrument. And the IQ test is a very blunt instrument, but I think it's a problematic instrument because it really only measures certain types of a person's ability to contribute. And, I've had experience with other types of assessments for my own son, Samuel. And there are some other assessments out there that are actually much more, I think, effective and realistic in terms of what a person's support needs are and what do they need to be successful in school or in employment or in community life.
Mm. You know, your film also talks about the history of disability rights to some extent and how it's been going on for a long time. The Kennedy family, Rosemary Kennedy's intellectual disabilities, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and shutting down the institutions that were supposed to be caring for people with intellectual disabilities, but instead were mistreating them. But, you know, after those institutions shut down, the appropriate resources were never put into community-based programs to help people with intellectual disabilities. Not enough. And some would argue that our jails have now become our de facto institutions because those resources were never properly appropriated. So how much have things improved, would you say?
I think on all these fronts, I feel like sometimes we take two steps forward and one step back. I mean, my wife, Betsy McNamara, just the other day wrote a piece for our local paper about the wait list in New Hampshire. And there's a wait list in many states where when you turn 21, you lose all that support from the school. The school is then done with you in terms of their support. In many states like New Hampshire, there's a wait list for getting adult services. So there are literally hundreds or even thousands of people around New Hampshire and other states waiting for some type of support once they turn 21 and are just in limbo. So you're right. I mean, you're right. There's, you know, state legislators and governors and certainly the president and the federal level need to understand that in order for people to have the kind of support they need to be employed, to have full community lives, they, you know, there needs to be money allocated to that. It makes sense, so much sense long term as well, because you're right. Many people end up in prison if they don't have other opportunities or in institutions.
Mm. So what else needs to be done? What do you want people to walk away with after they see this film?
Well, I think the biggest thing would be this notion of what I would call presuming competence. It means when you see someone that moves differently or talks differently or has some type of disability, the best thing to do is presume that they're competent, presume that they can contribute to schools, to employment, to relationships, to families. Unfortunately, I think those differences in our society often lead people to assume that they're incompetent in some way. So I think really if people leave the film and when next time they encounter someone that they're meeting for the first time that may have a disability, particularly an intellectual disability, you know, don't judge them as being incapable of contributing to every aspect of our society, because with the right supports, everyone is going to find strengths. I mean, Nair shows his strength in many ways, particularly through his art. Micah in the film has incredible social and emotional intelligence. He's very active on social media. You know, he's so connected and so kind. Naomi just brings a sense of joy and spirit to the workplace where she is now that charges up the whole workplace. They're all contributing in their own incredibly meaningful ways to the communities around them.
And how widespread would you say acceptance is? Or are you still running into or folks running into a lot of walls and obstacles trying to be included and find a meaningful way to contribute?
You know, I think a lot of it actually comes down to each individual community and what they're doing in their schools. If schools in a community are inclusive of kids of all abilities, then the kids in that community are growing up in that kind of diverse environment. If they're in a community where kids with disabilities are segregated, the kids without disabilities are not having that diverse experience. And I think that stays with them as adults. And when I talk to people around the country, people that have been growing up in inclusive schools have a completely different perspective on disability than people who grew up in a very segregated school. So I think it all comes back to making sure our schools in every community are being truly inclusive.
Okay. Dan Habib, filmmaker at the Institute on Disability at the University of New Hampshire. His latest film is titled Intelligent Lives. It will have its East Coast premiere at the Independent Film Festival Boston on Friday. You can find more information at our website, radioboston.org. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna and Chris Satorik with help from Zoe Mitchell and Cassandra Sunt. Tim Skog is our technical director. We had help today from Eddie Mazulis. Our executive producer is Hitesh Ati. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.